This morning is approaches to e-learning for infection prevention and control. Welcome, John.
Thanks very much, Barbara, and thanks to the conference organisers for inviting me to address you today. It's a great pleasure to be in Nelson, and it is sunny outside. I've just been out to check, so not quite as warm as Newcastle. So I'd like to today just to survey through some of the infection control education material that's out there, particularly focusing on the NHS learning program for infection control that we piloted in the Hunter in Western Australia, and it'll be news to music to Martin's ear perhaps. So I've got a little video about that to show later in the presentation. I think you share the same challenges we share in Australia of reaching everybody in healthcare. There's wide dispersal of staff through sparsely populated areas. And we're increasingly up against governance, regulatory and accreditation requirements to ensure that all healthcare workers are exposed to necessary education. We have emerging credentialing requirements for things like hand hygiene and aseptic procedures. We have difficulty getting the education time with staff. And there's all sorts of needs for different levels of training, both clinical, non-clinical, practical, theoretical. And I think this is underestimated, the literacy barriers that occur through different staff cadres, also the issue of English as second language for many of our people from other countries. And then we've got the thorny one of engaging our medical staff and actually getting them to listen first and then getting them to change their behaviour, an even bigger issue. And really, at the bottom, it really should be up the top, is how we educate in order to change behaviour. And I think education is just the beginning step. The crucial thing is having systems of audit to track what people are doing in the clinical arena and then to feed that back, whether they be cleaners, doctors or whatever, and engage them in such a way that their behaviour changes in the way that you're able to show. Next slide. So e-learning, what do we understand by e-learning? Well, I think all of us have seen this. It enables distance learning over the computer, ability to take up where one's left off. And it can be designed in several ways to address different learning styles. So there are those amongst us that do better verbally than visually. So you can do verbal overlays over the presentation material. There's all sorts of ways in which people that have like to see things drawn or see things diagrammatically pictured can be given to them. It won't approach all learning styles, but it does get across to most people. And most people are using it in conjunction with other things, so face-to-face learning or skills lab approaches. Bernard Luskin has been quoted as saying that it shouldn't just be electronic, it should be exciting, energetic, enthusiastic, emotional, extended, excellent and educational. That's a passionate fellow, isn't it, to be able to say that. So I'll step you through a few examples that I'm aware of, but there's a massive material out there that's just emerging, some areas very rudimentary. So the Australian Commission on Safety and Quality in Healthcare has been leading the charge on the infection control arena nationally in Australia, and I'll take you through their hand hygiene package, which is based around the Five Moments program, which I think New Zealand's adopting at the moment as well. They've also scoped and tendered out a training package for infection control practitioners. This is sort of an advanced package that Monash University are working on. I think that will be possibly of great use to New Zealand as well if it can be adapted. There are existing donning and doffing videos for personal protective equipment. It's amazing how this area is so controversial about the exact sequence of how you put on and take off your PPE for airborne precautions. And I won't go into that today, but suffice to say, I think they've got it wrong in that video. But anyway, and then I'll step you through some of the other things, particularly focusing on the Intuitions NHS program. There is a a Gates Foundation funded program called Engender Health. I'll just alert you to that. That's focused for low resource settings, so developing countries and so on. It's quite an interesting resource there. So if you go to hha.org.au, anybody can go down to the e-learning program, the online learning package, and it's not passworded. It takes 10 to 15 minutes to complete, and this is an expectation now throughout all Australian healthcare that healthcare workers complete this at least annually. And I'll just show you some of the slide captures from this. It's fairly rudimentary. It's designed to go over low bandwidth systems, so it doesn't have any videos in there. I think that's a detraction from it. It has four sections. Each section ends with a range of multiple choice questions that are drawn from a bank, and you have to answer all the questions correctly before you can progress. And if you don't answer correctly, you have to go back to the beginning of that module. So they're fairly straightforward questions. These are just some slide captures. When should I perform hand hygiene? Very much in accord with the five moments model. I might say as an aside that the WHO have recently published their final version of the hand hygiene resource in May, which is an excellent resource for you to go to if you ever need to answer a question about any aspect of hand hygiene. So there's Section B questions. There's a how-to section about how to wash and how to use a hand rub, and again questions on that. And then there's a section on glove use, nails, skin care, and issues to do with reactions to rubs, and again questions. And then at the end it goes through a clean between. I think it should be clean before, really, shouldn't it? But it's interesting that we have this. I think the instruments we take to the patients are our extensions of our hands, and we should really clean before and after. But they've gone with a clean between. And safety facts. You may have found that some of your OH&S people don't like you keeping too much alcohol on the ward. They've ignored the fact that alcohol's been in virtually every antiseptic and so on in large volume everywhere, and it's down in the local bottle shop after all, not in fume cabinets. So again, questions. So that's quite a nifty, quick introduction to hand hygiene. It doesn't really substitute for practical instruction. And I really think we do need to be giving practical instruction to healthcare staff, healthcare students, etc., and actually signing off that people are competent. But in terms of giving an exposure for orientation purposes, I think this fits the bill. And what we now need is management to follow through with a requirement that everybody does that training. And I don't think those systems are in place yet. Next, I'll just show you a little bit about a central line insertion program that the Clinical Excellence Commission in New South Wales has put together as part of their prevention of central line associated bacteremia program. And this is very much designed with the intensivists in view, and looks very nice. It's very nice photos and is quite interactive, and again has assessment that goes through it. Really trying to explain the rationale behind the central line bundle and the importance of asepsis with insertion, but also so attending to common causes of patient injury due to central line insertion. These are our data locally, just showing you the impact of implementing bundles. We've got five intensive care units, the big ones at John Hunter in Newcastle, and we were getting within, you know, 4 to 7 events per quarter. We're down to sort of 0 to 1 now per quarter, and that's been relatively painless with implementation of a bundle. So let's just, I've got a 3-minute video just to introduce you to the NHS program, and then I'll step to the evaluation of our pilot just to give you an idea of how it panned out in New South Wales and Western Australia. So I'll just ask for the video to be played. Thanks. Bit of a hard sell.
combating healthcare-associated infection, it strongly advocates infection control and prevention training for everyone working in or for the NHS, whatever their role. This National Infection Control Training Programme provides both e-learning materials that can be accessed independently and face-to-face sessions that can be delivered throughout the hospital or organisation by a broad range of trainers. Some of the key advantages of this training programme are that it has been created by a team of national experts and approved by an NHS-appointed expert reference group, addresses a dual audience, includes a self-paced e-learning element, includes highly structured face-to-face sessions, draws extensively on work-related scenarios. To provide maximum flexibility and practicality, the programme is available in both e-learning and face-to-face formats. By blending both types of learning, this programme aims to deliver a solution that caters for all learners and learning styles. The programme meets the challenge of designing and delivering training to a highly diverse audience, including professionally qualified clinical staff, non-clinical support staff, and contractors and agency staff. The programme is structured across three courses. Let's look at these three courses in turn. Course 1, Infection Prevention and You, communicates that we can minimize the risk of infection if we all work together, following the same fundamental infection principles and procedures. Course 2, Principles of Infection Prevention, consists of four modules which focus on hand hygiene, appropriate use of personal protective equipment, safe handling and disposal of waste and sharps, and environmental cleanliness. Course 3, Putting Theory into Practice, is highly interactive and designed to be delivered in a trainer-led face-to-face environment. It includes video scenarios as the basis for group discussion and is aimed at ensuring that staff can put their learning into practice in their work context. It also includes materials such as activity-based workbooks and discussion activities that focus on assessing and managing risks of infection. The courses have a modular structure. Each module identifies and covers clear learning objectives in its topics and presents a closing summary. Each module is followed also by an assessment in which the learner can assess their progress and understanding. A comprehensive range of effective learning aids are used within the programme's e-learning element. Let's look at some examples. Illustrated diagrams, flowcharts, animations, and tables provide detailed visual explanations of content. Step-by-step animated guides clearly describe procedures used in infection control. Click and display features allow learners to explore related concepts. Questions and exercises enable the learner to track their progress as they study. Drag and drop questions test their ability to match information or sequence the steps in a procedure. Practical work-based exercises, such as completing local risk assessments, facilitate learning in the workplace. Case studies and scenarios allow the learner to apply their knowledge by solving real-life problems. The program also offers a rich variety of resources, including end-of-topic work-based activities, printable summaries of each module, a searchable glossary of terms, recommended web-accessed resources, and further learning resources. This program is designed with the learner in mind. All its features are aimed at motivating, engaging, and supporting the learner, and at reinforcing its central message: infection prevention is everybody's business.
Right. Well, that's... So, We took this program fairly unmodified. We added an introduction from the Chief Executive of the Commission, Australian Commission, as an introduction, replacing the Chief Nurse who was in the program. And we explained to the pilot group that the content hadn't been changed. The clinical program, this module, this course one is designed for clinical staff, and it generally takes about half an hour per module to go through that with assessments and so on. And I think all of that has been shown to you on the... I'd hidden these slides, but... So we piloted in rural Western Australia and two small district hospital sites in Hunter, New England, over 1,200 users, a lot of use of the face-to-face materials and e-learning. And we have... I've got data on the perception of those users. Basically, very well-accepted course. Not many people found it too difficult. This is a question about doing the course with worthwhile investment in time. Majority agreed at a high level for that. A small amount of disagreement, 3.5%. In my opinion, having undertaken this course will improve my work practice. Again, agreement to this. There were a reasonable number of doctors who took the program as well. So I don't think they were the people in disagreement. One of the things that people liked, that there were quizzes and activities within there that were very strongly endorsed. And the end of learning assessment test was also seen to be a valuable thing in terms of reminding them. And the assessment test actually provides feedback at the time when you get a wrong answer. It actually flashes up why you're incorrect. And that those assessment test marks can be tracked into your learning system if you wish. Although I don't think the NHS require that. They actually just want to know that healthcare staff have completed the program. Although I don't, Martin might correct me, I don't think it's universal in its uptake in any way yet. They've perhaps got in excess of 100,000 users currently, and it's building all the time. Perception of how learning will impact on patient and staff safety. 44% said safer, and 36% the next level down. So, again, it was seen to be a valuable adjunct to all the other measures taking place. As to whether it changes behaviour is another question. These were a range of comments we had from users. There were complaints about the UK-specific content, which we couldn't do anything about in the pilot. And, you know, I think that was just people getting annoyed with quoting of UK data, although the Australian data could have been inserted there without any change virtually. the quizzes were good, very useful learning tool, not over easy, good use of statistics. So the program actually quotes some of the healthcare associated statistics to the clinicians and provides some education about the role of patient safety, healthcare-associated infection and its importance. And certainly this was about the only way we could get to the remote staff in Western Australia. Western Australia is vast, as you know, and has one regional area health service for the entire rural part of the state. And so this was a very good way of getting to those people. So let's just step aside from the NHS program and just look at issues to do with e-learning. I think e-learning is very useful adjunct, but it does need to be built into training and certification record systems so that we're not allowing people just to do training willy-nilly without tracking compliance against that. And I think the smart way to do this is through some form of transferable record system. In our state, we use a system called PathLaw, which tracks every employee and their training and credentialing requirements on an online system. We can also embed these separate programs within an e-learning environment, because most e-learning packages are now created against one or more international standards that allow them to be slotted straight into things like Moodle or Blackboard or other learning environment platforms. Moodle is an open source software developed in Western Australia that is completely free and allows you to set up a framework for learning, including courses. It allows you to slot in external courses and manage things like bulletin boards and blogs and wikis and other things that might aid with a group learning setting, an online group learning thing. And we need to track in there the face-to-face learning that's occurring as well. A lot of our work as infection control people is doing that face-to-face learning. We need to document that learning's occurred. I think increasingly governance requirements will see that those records are very important, and we'll need to audit compliance with training requirements. We've finally got our management to agree mandatory targets, mandatory courses that get done on employment and annually, and we've got infection control in there. But now the challenge is getting it all hardwired into the system so that we can actually audit that compliance, bring it back to the managers and say, this is not happening, we need to make it happen. It's not sufficient just to set out a guideline. In Australia, the Commission for Safety and Quality in Healthcare is releasing a revised National Infection Control Guideline. This is a revision of the 2004 guideline, extensive revision, and the intent is to attach some sort of learning element or learning program to that. The NHS program is being considered perhaps as a model for adaptation. I don't think a decision has been made in that regard. There's another big strategy occurring on antibiotic stewardship, and we've highlighted the need to educate prescribers, all prescribers of antibiotics, in a much more explicit manner to ensure that they know how to use antibiotics correctly. And so we are developing materials that can be used on an online environment, both for generic prescribers but also for special areas like intensive care. There are relatively few materials available across the world in that regard. We've been looking for them. Antimicrobial pharmacists are a special breed of pharmacists, and they also need training. So there are both university training programs but also online training programs that are being developed for those people. I like to talk about microbial literacy. I think you'll all agree when we do our hand hygiene audits, we find that healthcare workers are relatively better at washing their hands after contact than before. And why is that? It's probably because they remember what their mother told them. You know, you've done something dirty, you need to wash your hands. And I think this all ties back to how we teach microbial literacy to children and to secondary students. And there are some novel approaches coming out in the e-learning area. This eBug, I'll show you some screens, snaps from that, is a European approach to improving microbial literacy in primary age children. I think it behoves us really to standardise and regulate our training of infection control and microbiology in tertiary health sciences streams. It's still really a dog's breakfast when you look at the different medical schools, the different nursing schools, as to what happens in practice. You know, what elements are there in the syllabus? What elements of practical instruction are there? I think we should be producing healthcare workers that have been credentialed against the key procedures, you know, invasive device insertion, hand hygiene, and we should require that credentialing to have occurred prior to the employment in the health service. And that can happen easily if we get standardisation of those processes within tertiary level education. I think that would just give us so much leverage in terms of our practice into the future generations if we can sort that out and agree it. Lots of egos to do. The community are going to things like Google all the time to research influenza or other things like that, and so there's capacity there to have opportunistic education available to the general community online, and I guess there you have to have work out a system of making that reliable education, finding a way in which you engage the people like Google to ensure that education that's provided through their program is sourced from a good source and has been accredited as such. And I think that's also something that should be looked at, because it is doable, it has enormous reach into the community, and really the community are our allies in terms of infection prevention. So this is the eBug program. It's just really a new thing. It hasn't been... It's actually attached to a website which has a lot of teaching resources related to microbiology that can be used by teachers in schools. This is going to be a multilingual one across Europe, of course, and there are two different programs at the moment for young children and older children. I just went into the young child's program, and it takes you through a number of environments. The child gets it's like a quiz show. You get asked for your name and your age, and then you get zapped down to the size of a microbe and put in on a hand, and you're wandering around the fridge, and you've got your mobile camera to snap photos of the bugs that you come across, and it tells you little stories and so on. It's quite natty and involving, and once I could negotiate the keystrokes, because I'm not of the right generation, obviously, but this gives you an idea of just I think this is just really a first step, but we could be doing a lot more in schools to teach basic hygiene and measures, just basic microbial literacy and respect, as well as antibiotic respect. So there's lots of references out there. There is a large online resource called Merlo, which is an expanding repository for free-to-air online resources. There's not a lot of infection control in there, but it's probably a place to keep an eye on. It is peer-reviewed, so there's peer assessments of those materials. We operate a website, HICSIG ANZ, which you've probably seen, which we do have some links to all these resources, but more than anything, we want to hear from you if you've developed something that you're proud of, that you want to share with the world. Because once you've developed something that's available online, it's available to anyone across the world, and you should be proud of it. Put it out there, get comment on it, and that will help you to improve what you've got and give a leg on to all the other people working in the area. So thanks very much.
Thank you, John. You've certainly piqued my interest, and I can picture us all heading home to surf the net and check out some of these websites. I'm quite fascinated with the concept of basic infection control credentialing being a pre-employment requirement, and I'm thinking, wow, what an ideal world that would be. So, any questions from the floor?
Just wondered, what was the website? Can we access the Australian changing of the NHS website that you spoke about and showed the slides from?
That website is... I'll have to ask the Intuition people whether we can be given some access for a period of time. That might well be possible. That access is closed off at the moment. It used to be possible that you could log on to the UK site and log in as a guest user and do the programs that way. Do you know, Martin, if that's still the case? I'll investigate that, and we can put advice on the HICSIG site. There's some e-learning pages on the HICSIG site you can go to.
Hi, it's not really a question, but the NHS, well, not the NHS, but the National Patient Safety Agency in the UK, they've released a new game based around I work for Hand Hygiene New Zealand, well, not for them, but on behalf of them, just to say they've got this game, which is very interactive, and it's based around the five moments, and that's been, I think that was released in the last month or 2 months. It's quite a good tool to use as well, and that's, I think, www.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nhs.nh National Patient Safety Agency on Google will do it, and you go straight to the game. And it's not easy, but it's quite good fun.
Fantastic. Okay.
And I live and work here, but, you know, we've used that in our campaign.
Yes, I meant to say that the NHS have also developed recent modules on urinary catheter insertion and care, and also vascular access device management. They've really done a good job, I think, in researching the material and developing it to a high level and testing it and so on. So my view is we shouldn't be reinventing the wheel here, that it's better to stand on their shoulders and adapt what they've done. That's the beauty of these materials. They are adaptable. And I guess the bugs behave the same in New Zealand as they do in the UK. That's arguable. In Australia, we think they'd behave differently in Western Australia to the Eastern Seaboard.
Thank you, John.